I will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, though.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken, so to speak.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd like to become a Patreon sponsor for the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, please go to our official website, bodybuildinglegendsshow.com, and in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the link to becoming a Patreon sponsor yourself. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. And happy new year. We are now in 2024, another year. So I hope everybody had a very, very happy new year. And on this episode of the podcast, we are going to do what we do every year on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. We are going to do our year in review. But because we talk about bodybuilding history, we go back in time. We don't talk about the year that just passed, 2023. We're going to go back 50 years, 40 years, and 30 years to talk about what happened in the world of bodybuilding in the past. So this year, of course, we always have Jerry Branum on the show to talk to us. Jerry is a great friend of mine and a great friend of the show. He's one of our favorite guests. Everybody loves when Jerry's on because Jerry has not only very extensive knowledge of training and nutrition, but he also has a great history in the sport. He was involved in bodybuilding back in the 1960s when he lived in Brooklyn, New York, and then he moved to California in the late 60s, and he trained with a lot of the legendary bodybuilders like Arnold and Frank Zane and a lot of those great guys, and he witnessed a lot of those competitions, and then he started writing for the magazines. He wrote for Joe Weider's magazine, and then he also wrote for Iron Man magazine. So Jerry has a very extensive history in the sport, and he's always fun to have on the show, and we bring him back every year at this time of the year to talk about our year in review. So I told Jerry that we could also even go back a little bit farther this time and talk about 1963, which we'd be going back 60 years. But 1963 was a very significant year in bodybuilding because the Weiders were starting their Mr. America, Mr. Universe competitions to compete with the AAU. And the AAU had a very significant contest as well, the Mr. America that year, where Harold Poole took second place. And then he defected over to the IFBB. It was also the year that Arnold started competing as a teenager and Sergio Oliva came to the United States. So we're going to talk about all that stuff on this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So we're going to talk about 1963 in review. And at the beginning of the show, we're also going to talk about all the people in the bodybuilding world that passed away last year in 2023. So we got a really, really good show coming up for you in a minute with Jerry Branum. So I hope everybody's having a very happy new year. I kind of went back and looked over, you know, as you always do at the end of the year, you kind of look back at the year that just passed and see what you did and what you didn't do and kind of review your life. So I was looking at the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. This was now our sixth year. So we're going to be going into our seventh year. We started in July, I think around July 4th or July 3rd. So this coming year, 2024, will be our seventh year doing the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I did not think it was going to go this long, but we have a very small but very dedicated audience who really loves the show. I know that because when I went to the Mr. Olympia this last, when was it, October? And it was in Orlando, Florida, and I was walking through the expo. I had so many people come up to me saying they love the show, people from all around the world. So that was really, really enlightening and also encouraging. You know, I didn't know that that many people listen. We do get a few emails here and there, but it really is a well-loved show from people who love the history of the sport. And also there's a lot of younger people that came up to me, which I thought was really encouraging. So that was nice that all these younger people want to hear about the history of the sport. And as Jerry and I mentioned on this episode of the podcast, there really is no way to get the history of the sport unless there's some YouTube channels that talk about it. Otherwise, the magazines are gone. And that's where I learned a lot about the history of bodybuilding and about not only the events that were going on now, but the events that happened in the past, was reading about them in the magazines. And those magazines are now gone. That's why I do so many shows where I read articles from the magazines. I thought that one we did last week was really cool, where we had some really good articles about the 1980 and 1981 Olympias. So these are articles that really capture what was happening in the sport and personalities, and they really get the details that is missing from today's contest coverage. Today, they just basically do these wrap-up shows on these YouTube channels right after the contest. If you ever go to the Mr. Olympia or the Arnold Classic, right after the competition's over, you'll see a bunch of people out in the lobby with their cameras and talking about it. We did that with RX Muscle this last year, where Dave Palumbo and me and Chris Aceto and a couple other people joined us, and we all talked about what happened. But then that's it. And there's no in-depth, detailed coverage like there used to be with the magazines. So that's why I like sharing these magazines with you guys, especially on the days or the weeks when we don't have any guests. And it's been harder and harder to get guests because we've talked to so many people now over the last 6.5 years. And some of these guys have unfortunately passed on. And a lot of the older guys don't want to do interviews, believe it or not. A lot of them are intimidated by doing it on the computer. They don't know how to use Zoom, and they just don't want to be seen, or they don't want to talk about it. So it's harder and harder to get guests, but I'm going to keep trying. And I have a list of guests I want to try to get this coming year. Phil Hill, I've talked to him. He's expressed interest in doing an interview. I think he's writing a book and he's about to finish it up. I'd like to get Rick Wayne back on the show, and Rick said he would be able to come back on. So I just got to pin him down for a time. We were talking to Diana Dennis about maybe having her on the show, but then that kind of fell apart. Rick Poston, who used to be a big competitor with the AAU, he was always a top competitor in the AAU Mr. America around the time that Jeff King was winning it, you know, 1983, 1982, 1984, right around that time. Great abs. He owned a gym out here in Florida, in Tampa, where I live. So I've talked to Rick, and he wants to come on sometime this year. So that'll be great. I was also trying to get a hold of Frank Richard from England. He has a Facebook page. It's like a fan page. So I tried to contact the person that was running the fan page who knows Frank and tried to get him. And I'd love to get Rachel McLish on the show. I tried her many years ago, so maybe I'll try again. Just some of these people are getting a little bit older. Rachel still looks like she's 30. She looks absolutely amazing. But some of them are getting older, and time is going by so fast, and you never know, you know, when you're going to pass. I tried to get Matt Mendenhall on the show, and look what happened with Matt. He suddenly died, you know, and I've had a few of those people that I wanted to get on the show that just all of a sudden passed away. Some of them were older, but some of them were young, and it was shocking. And I was like, damn, I never got a chance to interview Franco. We didn't expect him to pass so fast. Egg Horny, I never got a chance to interview him. So I'd love to get Ken Waller, too. I know Ken just did an interview on the internet relating to Mark Martinez's movie, Dream Big. So he did do an interview, so I'd love to get him on this show, too. So, yeah, I've got a list of people that I'd love to get on. So I will make an effort and try to get some of these people on, and even more people. So this last year, in 2023, we did talk to Roy Callender. Roy had a new internet program. It's actually, it uses AI, believe it or not. So we did an interview with Roy at the beginning of the year. We talked to Bill Grant again. We had Tony Pearson on because they made a documentary about Tony's book, Driven. So we had him on, and Andrew Menjivar, who was the director of the movie. We had David Kinder on. David was an old-time bodybuilder. Never really won any titles, but he was around and he trained with Steve Reeves. So we had him on earlier in the year. We had Gabe Boudreau. That was a great interview. Gabe is in his 80s, still training hard, and he had a great physique back in the 60s. So it was really an honor to talk to Gabe. When Mike Quinn passed away, we had Rick Valente and Neil Spruce on. We did a tribute show about Mike Quinn. I got a chance to talk to Brian Moss this last year. That was really great. I've admired Brian and his photography and what he did with his gym, Better Bodies, in New York since the 80s. So that was really a great interview, and Brian had a lot to say. That was a two-part interview. We got a chance to talk to Steve Weinberger this last year. Steve is the head judge with the IFBB, so it was great to talk to. I love talking to judges. I love talking to writers and photographers. And Steve is the number one judge in the IFBB. He's been doing it a long time. I think Steve's about my age. He's been involved in sport for many, many decades. It was great to talk to Steve and get his views on how he got started and also his views on judging. And then we also talked to Paul Becker, who just wrote a book called Mike Mentzer and Me. So we ended up having, I believe, 34 shows last year. I did 12 episodes where we just read the bodybuilding magazine. So that was a big part of this last year on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. So like I said, on the weeks when I don't have any guests, That's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to read some more of these magazines because I have a ton of these magazines, and it just seems like a shame not to share them with you guys because I love them. I still get excited when I read them. That one that I read last week that was written by John Meade right after the 1980 Mr. Olympia was so exciting. It was so cool to see all these viewpoints from all these guys that were in the contest and the judges and stuff. I remember that article. So there's other great articles like that that I want to share with you guys about some of these great times in bodybuilding over the past. All right. I don't have any emails this week. If you guys want to email me about this show or any other ideas you have for the podcast itself, you can just send me an email at naturalolympia@gmail.com and I'll read your email on the air. But other than that, Happy New Year to everybody. And let's get on with the show. Here is Jerry Branum and I talking about the year 1963 in review. Here we go. All right, welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I have my good friend Jerry Branum with me this week, and we are doing our annual review, year in review that we do every single year. Jerry, we've done this now for, I think, 5 or 6 years. We do it every single year. And we go back, unlike other podcasts where they do the year in review that just passed or that just ending, we go back because we're about bodybuilding history. We go back 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. And I thought, Jerry, we might even go back 60 years this time just to make the show a little bit longer.
Be back.
Yeah. But Happy New Year, Jerry, and thanks again for joining me. I appreciate it.
You and Happy New Year to all your listeners and viewers too. I hope they have a great year.
Yeah. So are you looking forward to the new year?
I am. I hope it'll be better than 23. 23 was a very sad year for me. My dog of 20 years died. My brother died.
Wow.
I was in the hospital for a month. He lost 33 pounds.
When was that, Jerry? I read that on your Facebook page, so I didn't realize you were that sick.
That would be about 4 months ago, maybe 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh,
About 4 months ago, I guess. Yeah, I had an intestinal obstruction. Actually, I had adhesions. My intestines were literally stuck together and blocking.
oh, wow. No
It
kidding.
was horrible. I got bloated out. It was intense pain. I had to have surgery. They had to cut these adhesions. But I didn't have any food for like 10 days. I was fasting, and I wasn't working out, of course,
Yeah.
and I just being th this after about a month, I had dropped 33 pounds. I actually was shocked to see I got back to my bodybuilding contest weight. I had
Yeah.
3 pounds left. I competed at a weight. Yeah, I weighed 210 when I competed. I was drug free, and when I got on the scale right before I left the hospital, I was 210. I said, "Son of a bitch!" I said, "I finally got back to my contest weight with one exception. This time, I had no muscle."
Right.
I mean, I hate to admit it, but most of the weight loss was muscle because I
Yeah.
was very catabolic. It was, and when you lose muscle, it tends to come first from the peripheral areas, your legs and your arms. That's what I noticed. Really, my legs were so skinny. I was almost terrified when I saw my leg. And my
Wow.
arms, I looked at my arms, they looked like they did when I started training at 12 years old.
Oh my
It's
God.
like little tiny skinny arms.
Yeah.
So, and plus you get this kind of weird look where you're not cut, but you're not fat, but it looks almost flabby, because
Yeah.
the muscles haven't been conditioning. Terrible, terrible. But I thought, this is a big surprise, I thought at my age it would take me like a year to get back some muscle. But the
Yeah.
surprising thing was when I went back to the gym, I mean, my legs are like 98% back as far as lost size and strength. The
Okay.
only thing is my upper body's still lagging a little bit. I'm not as strong as I was before I got sick, but I've gained even the upper body about 80% of my strength back, which really surprised me. I figured at my age, it would take a much longer, if this happened when I was in my 20s, boom, I'd be back in a month,
Yeah.
I figured at my age it would take a long time, but what I didn't take into account was all this regular training I had done. I had this kind of like with the thing about memory, muscle memory. I had these my satellite cells, they're called stem cells. They were ready to be stimulated again. All I had to do was go to the gym and wake them up, and the muscle came back. That's what happened. So I kind of learned a lesson from this. I realize now that. This is a lesson for anyone. If you are regularly involved in, let's say, resistance training with whatever purpose, most older guys just want to, like me, want to stay healthy and prevent disease and prevent muscle loss. If for some reason you can't train for, let's say, a month or more, don't worry. as soon as you go back to the gym, your muscle will come back, even if you're in your 70. It will come back. I know,
Wow.
I've seen this now, but not just with me, I've seen it with others too. So it's something to think about.
You were in the hospital a month then, you said?
I was there for 3 weeks.
3 weeks, okay.
For the first week, I had to go, they misdiagnosed me 3 times in a row. I went to the emergency room 3 times in a row because the pain was intense, vomiting like crazy. I mean,
Oh, really?
I couldn't sleep. And first time they said I had constipation, they did CAT scans. First time they said I had constipation and I should go home and take laxatives and fiber. I said, listen, I take so much fiber. It's not fiber. It's not. I tried to argue with this ER doc. Well, we didn't find anything. Then I came back a second time because the pain didn't dissipate. And the second time they did another CAT scan, and they kept me. I think I was hospitalized for like 2 days, and they let me go. And which was way too premature because 3 days later I had to go back for the third time to the emergency. They did another CAT scan. And remember, this is three CAT scans in less than 2 weeks. The third CAT scan did show a blockage in the intestine, and they admitted me, and I was in the hospital after that for
Wow.
stuck a tube down my nose into my throat. It was horrible. Couldn't, of course, I couldn't eat. And I was on IV fluids, and all this stuff was bringing all this fluid that was accumulating in my, that was making me bloated. And they thought that maybe if they got rid of all the fluid, things would get better. It didn't work. And the surgeon comes in one day. He says, "Your only option really is surgery, because if we let you go, you're just going to keep coming back." I said, "Well, I don't want to keep coming back here, and I don't want this pain." They had to keep giving me morphine. I said, "Let's go with the surgery." So I did the surgery, and about what 3 days later, they let me out, and the rest,
Wow.
and that I was on a like a liquid diet for about a week or two, and then I went back to gradual eating.
Wow. That's tough. Yeah. So the last time we talked was when we talked about the Arnold documentary. So it happened after that, Spen, right?
It happened after that, right?
Okay. Wow. Well, I didn't know you went through all that.
Oh, terrible. I wouldn't wish that on anybody. Jeez.
Well, hopefully 2024 will be a better year for you.
I hope so.
Before we talk about 1963 and go back 60 years, I thought we should recognize some of the people in the bodybuilding world that passed away. So I was looking at my old podcast that I did over the last year. So some of the names that popped up, because I usually try to mention them on the podcast. Back at the early part of last year, around February, I think, Kurt Marnoul passed, and that was Arnold's trainer out in Austria. And I think he was 93 years old, so he lived a long life.
Good for him. I
Yeah.
remember reading about Carl Manu.
Yeah.
As I say, he's the guy who's often credited with turning Arnold on to steroids when he was a teenager.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think he's actually said that in interviews, but whether that's true again is open to speculation. Who knows?
Yeah.
Whether he turned it Arnold on or Arnold himself discovered steroids, who can say? All I know is, and I think you can confirm that, anyone can by Googling early photos of Arnold. He did dramatic changes from between 16 and 18.
Yeah, that's what
Showed
I noticed. Yeah.
gigantic muscle gains. I mean, huge
Yeah.
muscle.
Yeah.
So I believe that's the truth. I believe wherever he got the steroids, I don't know, but he got the steroids. That's
Yeah. Yeah.
the bottom line.
Yeah. Because if you see pictures of Arnold at 16, 17, I mean, he had a good physique, but he didn't look huge.
Oh.
But he said Arnold's story is when he went to the army, he had to do that mandatory service at 18 years old. And he said they were giving him meat every day, which when he was growing up in Austria, he didn't have meat. They had meat like once a week. So he said all the protein is what made the difference. But I remember like when I was a kid and I was reading Education of a Bodybuilder, and you're looking at the pictures going through the book and you see him at, 16, 17, and all of a sudden, I think it was 18 or 19, you're like, whoa, that picture where he's standing in the mountains, he looks so huge.
At 19, I think, what was it, already competing in the Mr. Universe set, wasn't
Yeah,
it?
19 he competed, yeah.
It's a huge difference in a couple of years. And I hasten to add that you don't get that from just eating meat. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I wouldn't buy that for a second,
Right.
Nice excuse, and people who don't understand how steroids work and all that might find that a plausible excuse.
Yeah.
I don't doubt that Arnold probably didn't eat much meat when he was back in Austria and all, because his family wasn't very, they didn't have much money.
Right.
I remember him saying they didn't have a bathroom in the house. He had to use an outhouse and all this.
Yeah.
I believe that he probably was on a tended to have a lower protein diet, but like I say, eating no matter you can eat 10 pounds of meat a day, that's not going to produce the results that Arnold showed in like a space of like 3 or 4 years. It's not going to happen. You know, Arnold.
I always wondered if he took him as a teenager. That seems, because it didn't seem like his physique was that big as a teenager, especially if he had good genetics,
Yeah, no, he started to really get bigger when he was about 18, 19. It's
That's when he got really big.
19 was huge. I mean, he was already gigantic arms and everything. There's a video of him posing somewhere. I think he was about 19. Maybe Columbo was in the, I don't remember, but he was huge. I mean, God, if he showed up at when I competed as a teenager, if Arnold would have showed up at 19, I would have pressed and left. I wouldn't even stand on the same stage as that guy. It dwarfed me, like, forget about it.
The other big person that passed away was Mike Quinn, and that was around June.
Yeah, Mike Quinn, when I worked for Weider, I interviewed all the top bodybuilders. Everybody knew me back then in the late 80s and early 90s. Mike Quinn was one of my favorite interviews because Mike did not hold back. Just he would just name names and tell you exactly what he felt. A lot of the other guys would hedge. They didn't want to get this guy mad. They didn't want to upset the promoter. They didn't want to get the other competitors mad. Mike would just let it all out. And I remember commenting to him. I said after in one of the interviews, I said, "Mike, the thing I love about you is you just are 100% true." And he said, "That's the way I am, Jerry." He says, "That's the way I am. I just let it all hang out and let the chips fall where they may." He says, "I don't care."
Yeah, I remember when he was in competing and he was in his prime, the magazines loved him. I mean, they were always doing interviews with him, and every time I saw an interview with him, I'm like, I gotta read this, because like you said,
Yeah,
he didn't hold back. He was totally honest.
well, they made him look like a mad dog, angry guy, like he was a. Truth is, if you got to know Mike, he was a really a nice guy. He wasn't that. I mean, he was very open in what he said, but he wasn't particularly angry at anything. He was very actually a pretty very sensitive guy. One time I was interviewing him, he was telling me he was had a very close relationship with one of his sisters. She passed away, and he was telling me the story, and he actually started crying. He was I felt bad for him. He was very upset by it. He said he went into a deep depression. He was actually a very sensitive guy, Mike. I kind of kept in touch with him through Facebook over the years. I was very sad when he died. I know he had health problems for a couple of years, and I'm very sad when he died. I really liked Mike. Really nice.
Yeah, I did too. I liked his physique too. I always looked up to him. I
Oh,
thought he had a lot of energy on stage. I loved his posing routines. And I
yeah.
liked his type of physique with the big arms and the wide back.
Oh,
That's the kind of physique I always liked,
double arm back shot was fantastic.
Oh,
I mean,
unbelievable.
wide, thick, big, great depth. I mean, one of the best. One of the best, for sure.
Yeah, and his arms were gigantic. Even as a teenager, that there's another guy that as a teenager was
Oh,
unbelievable.
yeah. As a matter of fact, I first met Mike. I was before I was writing for Weider. When he first came, showed up in the West Coast, he competed in AAU, might have been a Mr. America.
Yeah,
I don't know.
84.
And I remember seeing him, and I'm thinking, this guy's great. I mean, look at those. He was just a teenager. I remember with his father, they both came from Massachusetts, and I looked at this guy. I said, "This guy's gonna if he he's gonna be a top guy one day." This guy, I kind of stood out even as a teenager.
He was in the 82 Nationals, the one that Lee Haney won, and he was only 20, and he was sixth place, I think. So at 20 years old, he's competing with these men, and he was right up there with them, in the heavyweights.
He was a phenomenal bodybuilder for sure, Mike.
And we did a tribute show on my podcast with Rick Valente and Neil Spruce because they both knew him and they worked out with him and stuff. So I thought it was worth doing that for him because he was a great bodybuilder, and I think he should be remembered,
Absolutely, I agree.
And then Lisa Lyon passed away. The woman who really started female bodybuilding passed away, I think, around in the fall.
I knew Lisa very well years ago when, especially when I was around when she first competed. As you say, she's one of the pioneer female bodybuilders. She was very petite when you see her in person, small boned, very pretty. When people don't know, when I knew Lisa, if I remember correctly, she was working as a script reviewer. In other words, she would read scripts for studios and determine whether they should go on to production. You know, she was very smart, very intelligent person. She got involved with this guy who was a famous scientist whose name escapes me at the moment. He worked with dolphins or something like that. She became almost like a stepdaughter to her, where, you know, he was talking about adopting her. That was a lot of things that people don't know.
Wow.
And when Gold's moved to Second Street, Pete Grabkowski took over the gym, I remember, and he let certain people train after hours. You know, he gave them keys. I would go there about 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning with Bill Grant. I was training with Bill Grant, and Lisa would be training there, and Pete would be training. All of us were trained there. And I ran into Lisa years later, long after she stopped competing at bodybuilding. I ran into her in the post office in Santa Monica. And, you know, there was still a lot of people that admired her. I think she had a book or something. She came out with a book.
Yeah.
Then this famous photographer shot her in a book. He called it Lady or something.
Yeah. Robert Mapplethorpe.
Right. Robert Mapplethorpe. Yeah. And she had a lot of fans. So I went up to her in the post office. I said, Lisa, well, you know, I was writing for the magazines then. I think it was in the 90s. And I said, Lisa, can I do an interview with you? I said, a lot of your fans would like an update on you, find out how you're doing. And she surprised me because she said, nothing personal, but no. I said, any reason why, Lisa? She said, well, some gossip magazine just did an article on me, and they said that that I'm dying of AIDS. So she said that in her mind, any publicity would be bad publicity. I said, Lisa, you know me. I'm an old friend. You think I'm going to make you look bad?
Right.
There's no way I'm going to do that. She says, well, you know, honestly, the truth is I just don't have any interest in it. No offense. So, you know, I said, well, good luck to you. And I never saw her again after that.
What year was that, Jer? How long ago was that?
This is around, let's say, mid-90s.
Oh, wow. A long time ago. Okay.
Yeah. That's the last time I saw her.
Yeah.
She didn't look very healthy to me, actually. She looked kind of, she almost looked like she had jaundice. Her skin was kind of yellowish.
Oh, really? Wow.
She looked healthy. She looked very gaunt. And it made me, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, gee, maybe she really does have AIDS. You know? I don't know. She didn't look good. I mean, she that's probably another reason why she didn't want to do the interview, because she figured maybe somebody would want to take pictures of her.
Yeah, yeah.
In her mind, she wanted to be remembered as she looked as a bodybuilder. You know, she's very, I mean, honestly, we've talked about this before. I appreciate hardcore female body. I'm not talking about the fitness girls or the bikini girl. I'm talking about the actual female bodybuilders. I appreciate the amount of muscle they put on and, you know, how muscularly defined they are. As a former bodybuilder, I'm in awe of their muscularity. Let me, you know, however, I think that female bodybuilding would have been a lot more popular if people like Lisa Lyon, if they had retained that look.
Yeah.
Corey Everson, you know, I think it went in a direction where it got a little bit too extreme for most people.
Absolutely.
That's why the popularity went down. In other words, the way people are conditioned, they expect men to be big and muscular. But when they see it in a woman, it's just, it's like an automatic turnoff to many people.
Yeah.
It's like, again, I don't want to get political, but it's like the way people feel about transsexuals. A lot of people just are repulsed by some, let's say, a man who wants to become a woman, who feels that he's born mentally a female and he wants to transform himself. They don't accept that. They say you it's biologically wrong. Stay the sex you are. It's almost the same thing with female bodybuilders. We expect to see certain feminine characteristics, and when they're in great shape, there's, you know, other than the breast implants, there's not many feminine characteristics left. And this turns off a lot of people. But, you know, I'm not going to put them down. If their dream and goal is to look as big and muscular as possible, more power to them.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, since we're talking about Lisa Lyon, all I'm saying is I think Lisa Lyon had an appearance that would have been universally accepted by men and women.
Mm-hmm.
Would have gotten a lot more women involved in bodybuilding.
Well, look at Rachel and how many people she brought
Rachel's
in.
another. Yeah, she's in that category too. Rachel
Rachel came after Lisa.
She came after Lisa, a little bit more muscular than Lisa.
Yeah.
Athletic looking, but she also retained all of her femininity, and she was a very, you know, very good looking woman. You know, she had a good personality. She also, and Corey was probably, I'd say Linda Murray would be probably the last of the acceptable female bodybuilders. Again, I got to emphasize to the public, I'm not talking about bodybuilding fans. Linda is a very nice person also. She was already on the road, kind of like just about the beginning of a hardcore look, you know?
Yeah. I think Corey, I think, would have been the limit. I think when you got to Linda, it was starting to go a little too far.
It was starting to go, but she still retained some femininity.
Yeah.
If you look at the Bill Dobbins photos of her, she looked very feminine, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Linda is a great person, very intense. She was a good representative.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm not putting down any female any Miss Olympia winners after her. I'm not trying to criticize them, but I think that, let's say, the only way I can put it, the acceptable look for the public ended with Corey and Linda. After that, it went in another direction.
I always wondered why they let it go in another direction, because it was so popular and there were so many women, and the media was so interested in it. I remember it was on CBS and ABC, and they were bidding. You know, they were bidding to put the shows on, and the Miss Olympia would be like at the Felt Forum in Madison Square Garden, like thousands of people, and they would hold it by itself. They wouldn't hold it with
the Miss
Olympia.
By itself. I covered a couple of those shows with Joe, and Corey was getting commercial contracts from companies like Reebok, you know, giant companies to sponsor her.
Right.
So probably could have gotten a couple, you know, but that ended, you know, with, again, Corey and Linda, because, again, the big companies knew that the look was not popular with most women. Most women do not want to look like hardcore female bodybuilders. In fact, you know, going way back, they have a morbid fear of being muscular.
Yeah.
I remember, you probably remember too. I remember a time when women were afraid to lift a light dumbbell, a dumbbell.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They thought it would give them muscles.
Right.
And they had a morbid fear of having any degree of muscularity.
Right.
I mean, of course, it's changed over now. Women realize that you more or less have to go out of your way to get that female body, but it doesn't happen just from lifting weights.
right.
Lifting weights actually is, from a scientific viewpoint, the very best thing a woman can do to shape and tone her body, much better than aerobics.
Yeah,
if you do it right, you get the best body you could possibly have.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was up to the organization and it was up to the judges, and they just rewarded, you know, once the muscular look started coming in, they just rewarded that, and it just kept accelerating. And then, I don't know, I think it was a bad move in hindsight.
I think so, too. I totally agree. But, you know, like a female, an athlete might say, well, you know, how do you account for this, you know, massive muscularity and look? And they say, well, you know, it's like an evolution. Everything evolves. You know, you start Lisa Lyon, Rachel McLish, and then they get this a little bit more muscular, a little bit more muscular, and then you get the women, the more recent look, which is shockingly muscular.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they got striations on their butt, which is amazing to me, because if you know anything about female fat distribution, anyone can tell you, the hardest places to lose body fat are in their butt and their hips and their upper thighs.
Right.
The way these female bodybuilders get ripped in those areas. It's just, I know that, you know, let's face it, they get a little help from their friends, like the Beatles. It's like a couple of medicinal helpers that they use to get that.
Right.
Still, just the mere fact that they have achieved that degree of muscularity as a former bodybuilder, I just rub my eyes in disbelief.
I know.
I could never get striations in my butt, even when I was at my lowest body fat.
Me too. The same way.
You know, so.
That was the whole thing with Pumping Iron 2, the movie, you know, like, where do we draw the line? You know, and if a woman is more muscular, should we, you know, downgrade her because of that? I mean, you know.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing because, you know, I mean, they are bodybuilders.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you step away from the aesthetics, let's say, or the femininity aspects, should they be judged as bodybuilders? Meaning, the most muscular, the one with the most dense muscles. I mean, should they be judged strictly as bodybuilders? And the answer would have to be yes. But again, I understand that, but if you're talking about mass appeal, no,
Right.
it's not going to ever happen.
The only way that I think they could have controlled it would have been really strict drug testing, because without the
That's
drugs, then the women's wouldn't have been that muscular.
right. But you see, but this guy who took over the Weider magazines and bought the Mr. Olympia, whose name is always escapes me. You probably know the guy's name, tall guy. I can't remember his name. Never
Jake
met him.
Wood.
Jake Wood. He happens to be a huge, huge female bodybuilding aficionado. He was married to a hardcore female bodybuilder from London. So when they stopped the Mr. Olymp Miss Olympia, when they cut it out, I think it was 2014. It was so they just actually stopped it altogether. Not only did they not separate, they just ended it. He started his own female bodybuilding, Wings of Muscle or something.
Wings of strength.
Wings of Strength. He actually kind of tried to resurrect female bodybuilding. Then, when he had the opportunity to take over the Weider Empire, he did. And one of the first things he did was announce that the Miss Olympia is coming back. My point is, if it wasn't for Jake Wood being a huge female admirer of female muscle, it never would have come back. Just it would not be back. It would not have. Female bodybuilders can
I
thank
wish
Jake
in
Wood.
retrospect they would have controlled it and not allowed it, but that's what they did.
That's it.
Another bodybuilder that passed away was Joe Grassi. He was a national level competitor. He won the lightweight class the year that Sean Ray won the 1987 MPC Nationals. He's from Boston, I believe, or Massachusetts. And he was a really good bodybuilder. I remember when he won it, he had a really good physique. And I think he ran a gym out there with his brother. And I think they promoted a lot of shows. So he couldn't have been that old. He must have been in his 60s, but he passed away last fall, too.
I was just going to ask you how old, because Sean himself is in what, mid-50s now, Sean
Sean is
Ray.
almost 60. I think he's like 58.
Was it Sean? Okay, so this guy would probably be around the same age, right?
A little bit older, maybe. Yeah.
Did they announce his cause of death or no, or you don't know?
I don't think so. I think, I heard when he died, but I don't remember why he died,
Oh, that's sad. It's always sad when you see one of these guys pass away, that young especially,
And then the other big passing we had this year was a friend of yours and a friend of mine as well, Ruth Silverman, who was a great writer. She wrote for Iron Man magazine, but before that, she wrote for Weider's magazine. Ruth always covered the women's side of bodybuilding. And I got to know her when I started working for Iron Man. And Jerry, I know you knew her for many, many years, right?
I met her. She worked for Weider years ago in the 80s. And before that, it was an interesting thing because a lot of the people that went to work for Joe Weider as writers and in other aspects of the magazine business actually came from, of all places, Hustler magazine.
Oh, really?
They worked for like Larry Flynt,
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
and like Jerry, I can't remember his name, who was the editor-in-chief of Flex, Jerry
Candela?
Candela. He worked for Hustler, and Ruth worked for Hustler,
Oh,
and
really? I didn't know that.
they were hired by Weider, and Ruth came over there, and at first, my first meetings with Ruth, she was like very defensive and almost antagonistic. I mean, like she'd attack, she'd you know I was. When she criticized my article, she'd say to me stuff like, she says, "You're lucky I'm a good editor." She said, "I have to do so much work on your article." And I'm thinking, why, what's her beef with me? I mean, why is she doing this? I'm not saying that my articles didn't take any editing at all, but she acted like I was illiterate, which wasn't true, And then I began to realize her shtick, with the deal with Ruth is, she was a feminist. She was a true feminist. Why she tried to help the female bodybuilders. She stuck out. I remember her, we were talking about Hillary once, and she was talking about how, one of the reasons Hillary lost was because, men didn't want a woman to be president. And she thought that was a major reason why Hillary lost. I said, wait a minute. I said, what about that, the stuff about the emails and all that? She says, yeah, that had a lot to do with it, but men don't are have a fear of women, she goes, and this and that. He goes, but other than that, Ruth was a very, very intelligent woman. I had great conversations with her. She mellowed out over the years, and I was a little sad to see her. The last time I saw her was at the Muscle Beach contest, and she had just Ruth was always kind of a little chubby when she was younger, but when I saw her at the Muscle Beach, she was small and frail. She had this blood problem that she had to take transfusions or something like that.
Oh, really? No kidding.
She had it for, it was a genetic thing. She had it for years. And she told me that unfortunately the disease was progressing. And I didn't want to say anything, but I could see it. She was very small and frail. I could help noticing at the Muscle Beach. And of course, then a couple of months later, she passed away. And, I felt very bad about that
Was
because,
that the Muscle Beach one in 4th of July, or was that Labor Day?
I don't remember which one.
They usually do Memorial Day, Labor Day, and 4th of July, right? Those are the three they
Must have
do.
been before the one before the 4th of July.
Yeah. Okay.
It might have been. I don't remember, honestly. All I remember is that's the last place I saw her.
Yeah.
Like I say, she was a great person. She was a good writer and a super intelligent woman who really, really tried to do as much as she could for female bodybuilders and fitness and bikini. She was
Yeah.
really on this side. She was a definite supporter of that aspect of bodybuilding. There's no
Yeah,
question.
she knew every competitor, every top competitor. She knew their background. She knew their contest history. I remember, like, when she was covering fitness, when she was covering figure, when she was covering bikini. I don't even know if bikini was around, like, when I was talking to her back then, like 10 years ago. It might have been. But she knew everything. Like, she knew every the background. And she was really, she was a journalist, like you said. She got her degree in journalism from, I think, the University of Chicago. Or Northwestern, it might have been Northwestern. Yeah.
Northwest, yeah.
Yeah. Because
Yeah.
I related to that because I'm from Chicago. But I remember she respected anybody in the field who had a degree, who was educated, So that was very impressive to her,
Right. No, all true. It's very true. She was educated, intelligent, always enjoyed talking to her. Most of the time I'd see her at Muscle Beach contest, the more
Yeah.
recent.
Yeah.
I'd sit next to her and we'd talk and make observations about some of the competitors. And I'm gonna miss Ruth. She was I always had a feeling though about Ruth that she was kind of a lonely woman. I mean,
Yeah, I got that feeling a little bit too.
felt that she I just I Bill Grant and I once went over her place in she was living in Hollywood or West Hollywood, I remember. And I don't know, I had this feeling from Ruth that she was kind of very lonely.
Yeah.
She didn't have many close relationships.
Didn't she live in the same apartment for a long time?
Yeah, with
20
Grant.
years or something?
Yeah, she did. That's
Yeah.
true. In fact, I asked her that in one of the last conversations. I said, Ruth, are you still in the same place? She said, yes.
Yeah.
She laughed. Yeah, she says, I'm on rent control or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I wrote a little bit something about her on Facebook, and I have a newsletter that I put out with this podcast, and I wrote about her on there too, because I just felt like people like her who are so dedicated to the sport, the journalists, they're all fading away now, like yourself, and just because there's no forum for journalism anymore, like Rick Wayne, we had Rick, Jack Neary, we had Peter McGough, and all those guys were, or girls were, so talented, and they were really good writers, and they were really dedicated. I mean, it took a lot of work to do the work they did. And that should be celebrated. That should at least be remembered, when she passed away. So that's why I tried to write something about her.
I totally agree. I mean, today people get their, magazines are all dead,
Yeah.
all defunct. So people get their information from social media, the internet. And unfortunately, whereas true journalists took pains, like Ruth and some of the names you mentioned,
Yeah.
Rick, Jack, they were taught to be factual and accurate in their
Yeah.
writing. But you don't get that on social media. I mean, people,
No.
whatever they want,
You get the opposite.
get the opposite. There's so much BS and lies. It's not the same.
Right.
Anyone who remembers the magazines can confirm what I'm talking about. I think I've told you in the past, when I covered bodybuilding contests in the magazines, I rather than just write about Joe's delts and Pete's big biceps, which people could see from the photographs, I
Yeah.
tried a different tact. I would go backstage. I didn't even sit in the press area. I'd go backstage and interview all. I already kind of knew who was going to win. So I'd interview the top six people in each class. No matter if they had five contests, I'd interview all of them. It took like hours. And what I asked them is, what did you do differently? Tell me about your training and diet. I turned the contest articles into bodybuilding articles, which I felt would be far more useful to the reader. I mean, this is a successful bodybuilder. Maybe you want to know what he or she did to get an appearance. And for that reason, because I did interview him like that, everybody who competed in contests in the 90s knew me, because I had kind of face-to-face relationships. I spoke to them all the time. Sometimes I'd sit with them in the dining room when they were on the road in the contest and this and that. So they but now today, if I go to Mr. Olympia or whatever, I'm complete. Nobody knows except people that might remember the 90s and stuff. Sometimes they remember my name, but the newer guys have no idea who I am. But I wouldn't expect them to, because I have no presence.
The
There's
only
no
way they would know you now is if being on YouTube.
Beyond YouTube, but I there's no presence. There's no magazine.
No.
So why would they know?
Right. I've got a ton of magazines, and every time I look through those old magazines, I'm just amazed at how much work went in every month to those magazines. All the writing, all the photography, whoever was putting the magazine together, whether it was Joe Weider or Bob Kennedy or whatever. I mean, just the pressure on them to put together this magazine, and what are we going to put in it, and what articles, and then do it monthly. I mean, it had to be like a 12-hour day job every day, to get that thing out every month. It was just so much work, and now it's, man, I just look back at those things like they're gold. When I get one of those magazines, I'm just like, I'm so appreciative of everything that went into that. And that's why I tried to give tribute to Ruth, because she was a part of that. She was part of that group. She was a journalist, and she really respected, good writing. She respected education, and she really worked hard, to do the best job she could while she was writing.
I had a column in Flex for a while, where I would go up to people, like I'd see at Gold's Gym. I had a little camera, and I would take a picture of them and do a little article to introduce them. I give them some publicity in the magazine. One of the guys I did that with was a guy named Jay Cutler. Chris Aceto was his trainer, I guess, at the time. And he
In the
called me
beginning.
up one day in Gold's Gym. He said, "I want you to meet this friend of mine. He's an up-and-coming bodybuilder, Jay. So Jay comes over, and first thing I see, Jay's wearing a tank top, and he's wearing shorts, and I think he was 19 or something like that. And I look at I'm looking at his legs. He flexes his legs, and I'm thinking, "Holy Toledo, you're 19." He says, "Yeah." So I took a photo of him, and I did a little. That was the very first article on Jay
Oh,
Cutler.
wow. No kidding.
And a couple other people I did went on to, I can't remember them all. I did men and women. I mean, if I look good, I would just go up and say, "Hey, listen, I have a column in Flex. I said, I'd like to take a photo, do a little article, and you give you a little publicity." And all of them said yes, because they know the power of publicity. They wanted to get it.
Well, that was the only way to get known was in the magazine.
That's it. And quite a few of them went on to be top bodybuilders. When I did it, and one of them was a woman who was in the gym. She looked pretty muscular. She didn't go on to be a bodybuilder. She went on to be a professional wrestler who passed away. I can't remember her name. This big girl with dark hair. She was there with her sister. I can't remember her name. Very famous. She went by one name.
China?
China. What's her name?
China,
That's her. She had, I think her name was Joanne. I can't remember her
It
real name.
was, yeah.
Yeah, and she was there with her sister, and I looked at her, and she had, big shoulders, and I thought she might be a bodybuilder. And I went up and I said, "Listen, I have this column for Flex magazine. I like to," so I took a couple of shots of her, and I did a little article on her. And I don't know if that one ever got in or not. I'm not sure, but that's how I met her. She was much smaller back then, but she was still pretty muscular. She went on to become
Oh,
China.
she was very big, very famous, very
She
famous for a
was much
while.
bigger as a wrestler. When I knew her, she was slim, and she just had a, kind of like a almost like a Rachel McLish type of appearance.
Oh, really? Wow. I can't even imagine that.
She was
Well,
very, very
rest in
nice.
peace to all those people that passed away this last year. All right, let's go back. Now, normally, like I said, Jerry, we usually go back 30 years, 40 years, 50 years. So that would be 73, 83, 93. But I was telling you before the show started, 1963, which is 60 years. It was
Right.
a very, very interesting year, and there was a lot of interesting competition. So I think we should briefly go over that a little bit. So you mentioned that 1963 was the year that Arnold started competing when he was like 16 years old.
16 years old, Arnold's very first contest. I guess it was it in Austria? I'm not sure
Yeah,
where.
I think it was. Yeah.
And there's a famous photo you can see where he's doing the side bicep like this.
Yeah.
There's a guy behind him. There's a band behind him.
The band is behind him,
Arnold had, even at 60, this is 1960, he had 16. He didn't have much muscle in his torso, you know. He had, but you could see, even at 16, you could see the beginnings
right? Yeah, the
of
biceps, yeah.
his bicep that he had.
Right.
He had this very serious look on his face, you know, short hair.
Yeah.
And 63 also stands out in my mind because that's the year that Sergio Oliva defected from Cuba and came over to the United States.
Wow,
Yeah,
okay.
that was 1963, and he started competing. I don't know if it was 63, but I know he's already competing in the AU in 64. He
Right.
moved to Chicago. And the third thing, of course, as you mentioned, John, was my good friend Harold Poole went
Yeah.
over to the IFBB in 19 after being ripped off.
Right.
I mean, in 62, 63, he just lost the, I think the thing that the final thing that pushed him over to the IFBB was losing the AAU Mr. America in 63 to a
Right.
guy named Vern Weaver.
Right.
I think that's the show where Harold just went nuts and smashed his trophy bag.
Right.
I mean, he went right over to Joe, and you'll have to correct me, but I don't know whether he w immediately won when he went over the FEB. I don't know whether he either immediately won either the Miss Universe or Mr. America. One of the two.
The Mr. Universe.
He won the Miss Universe immediately.
Yeah. And
Now,
he was 19 years old.
19 years old. Now, in Vern Weaver's defense, now, Vern Weaver is a sad story, and you probably know about him. Vern Weaver was a handsome guy. He was also Bob Hoffman, who ran the York Barbell Company, which kind of dominated the AAU bodybuilding competition,
Yeah.
especially in America. He loved Vern Weaver because Vern Weaver had that Germanic or all-American look, and a good-looking guy. And to top it all, he was a good Olympic weightlifter.
Right, I remember that about him.
And Bob Hoffman, even though, you know, he grudgingly kind of allowed the AAU Mr. He didn't like bodybuilding. Joe did. Joe Weider did. But the true love of Bob Hoffman was Olympic lifting. He was the Olympic lifters coach for a while, you know. So here we have a guy, Vern Weaver, who was a decent, not a champion, but a decent Olympic weightlifter who was a pretty good bodybuilder. I mean, he was a little bit blocky, but if you see him like in a double arm bicep, he had nice lats, and his double arm back shot was very impressive, almost like Mike Quinn. He had very big delts, probably from all the lifting he did, you know. But here's the key: he wasn't as muscular as Harold. Standing next to Harold, he would look like the Pillsbury Doughboy. So, you know, most of the people who watched that contest in 63 did feel that Harold should have won. And Harold had already lost the year before in 62 to Joe Abenda, which was also controversial. Harold thought he should have won that one too, and so did a lot of people there. So
Right.
he lost to Vern Weaver. That was it. I'm done. I'm going to IFBB. And he never looked back.
Yeah, it's what's amazing about Harold is how good he was at such a young age.
Oh man, Harold was a phenomenon. He was. I saw a picture of him at 17. He looked great.
Yeah.
When he was seven, either six, I think it was 16 years old. He was only 16 years old. He was living in Indiana, and he was voted the top high school athlete in the country.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, he was like an all-around athlete, especially in track and field. He was an all-around athlete at 16. Harold was.
See.
People don't know that he was a great athlete. He had no problem getting, remember the athletic points, the five athletic points that I
Yeah.
used? He had no problem getting that. He didn't have to do anything. Because he was such a great athlete. It was
I think he was also in the Mr. America at 16. He didn't place well. He was pretty
You're
raw.
right. That's right. He entered at 61, I believe, when Ray, let me think. Now, I don't know if he
Or
was in
60,
60.
maybe 60, I think.
That was when Lloyd Larrell won. Yeah.
Exactly.
Larrell happens to be, just for your own information, Lloyd Larrell right now is the oldest living Mr. America.
Because Bill Pearl passed away. Yeah.
Because Bill Presley, he was one in 1960. He's the oldest living Mr. America.
Yeah.
Lloyd Larrell.
Yeah, but Harold, I think at 17, took fourth at 17 in the Mr. America.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that 61 or no? Or
That was 61. And then 18, he took second. And when he was 18, he took second in 62 to Joe Avenda.
okay.
And then he got second. And he won Most Muscular every year, too.
I didn't realize he was only 18 and 60 when he lost to Joe Albenda.
Yeah, because he
He
was
was only
19. Because after he did the America where he lost to Vern Weber, he went
yeah.
into the teenage Mr. America and he lost that to Jerry Daniels.
Oh my God, that I don't remember that one.
Yeah.
Jerry Daniels, who went on to win the 65 AAU Masters.
Right. Yeah. So that, I think that was just, that threw him off. He said, I'm done. I'm
I can see that. I'm sorry, losing to Jerry. That's worse than losing to Vern Weber. I mean, Jerry Daniels had a biceps. That's about it. I mean,
Yeah.
he had like a swimmer's body. Had no real physique.
And
But
I
he,
think everybody, like you said, everybody thought he should have won the Mr. America, and then he
yeah.
can't even win the teenage Mr. America. Come on, you know.
That was, I mean, they just didn't want a black guy to win. Let's put the cards on the table. There's no way around it. They didn't want a black guy to win. So, no matter how good Harold was, and Sergio Oliva experienced some of that too when he first came up. He was placing fourth and fifth in contests, where guys, it was embarrassing to see them on the stage. When you see the top four or five guys, there's Sergio on the edge of the stage in fourth and fifth place, where he has twice as much muscle as them.
I know, it's a joke.
I mean, come on. Even a guy who didn't know a thing about bodybuilding
Would
would look
know.
at people like that and say, wait a minute, how did that guy get fourth?
I know. So now what's also interesting, Jerry, we should explain, the AAU Mr. America was the biggest contest in the country. It started in 1939, so this was 1963, so it had been going for many years, and it was still the number one contest. But like you said, they looked for an overall. They didn't just look for the muscles. You had to have a personality because they did an interview section with you, and then you had to have the athletic points as well, you know. And they said that's what held Harold Poole back, was he had stuttering. I guess he stuttered when he talked.
Have stuttering,
So
yes.
when he did the interviews, I think that might have been, in addition to him being black, if they were racist, I think because he had the stuttering problem, they said, you know, we can't give this. So they would give him the most muscular every year, but they wouldn't let him win the overall, Mr. America.
Yeah, that happened to a couple of other previous black bodybuilders in the 50s and 60s. There was a great black bodybuilder named Arthur Harris.
Yeah, he was really good.
Same thing. He would win like most muscular, but they give him like third or fourth place. He also was horribly ripped off. Horrible. It was just such obvious overt racism. Was to really, when you look back on it, you have to shake your head in disgust at this. I mean, it was just terrible. Terrible thing.
Then the IFBB back then, people may not realize this, but they were very small. Like Joe and Ben Weider were trying to get, you know, bodybuilding going, and they really had a hard time getting it going. So I think this year, let me check. I got my notes here. I think that was the first year that they held. Let me see. No, it started in 62. They started holding it in New York.
Wait.
Because what I found out was in 1960, they held the IFBB Mr. America in Canada.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
So they would hold their version of the Mr. America, Mr. Universe to compete against the AAU and NAVA, but they
Right.
actually held it in Canada because that's where the Weiders were from.
That's true.
Yeah. And
Can't
it
you?
didn't start till like 59. So they were kind of late. You know, you consider the AAU America started in 39, and then they didn't start till 59. So.
Do you remember who won that first IFBB America when it was held? It wasn't Ed Theroux, was it? Or
I think it might have been Chuck Sipes.
oh, Chuck Sipes won it. Okay, so he went to Canada to win the Mr. America.
Yeah.
Funny.
Let me see. I got my notes here. So the IFBB, well, this was in 60. 1960 was Gene Shuey. He won the Mr.
Shuey,
IFBB Mr. America. Yeah.
Gene Shuey, yeah, okay. All right.
And Chuck Sipes won the Universe. So, yeah, he must have won it in 59. Chuck must have won the America in 59 because he won the Universe in 60.
Okay. Yeah.
So, let's see. So, 61, I think they didn't even have the competitions. The IFBB did not have a Mr. America or Mr. Universe. But then in 62, they got that guy, Bud Parker, in New York.
Right, Bud Parker. Right.
And he started holding it at the Brooklyn Academy of Music. And then
right.
it just built from there. And then eventually they added the Mr. Olympia in 65. But 62 was the first year that it, and I think they really caught on and they got a big audience. And I think people started to like the IFBB version of the Mr. America a little bit better because, well, they had a more well-rounded, they had more black bodybuilders from, especially from the Caribbean and stuff. And it was more of a muscle show. It wasn't like the AAU would always hold their contest after the weightlifting, but
weightlifting.
the IFBB was just bodybuilding, you know? So I think people like that better.
Right. I remember when I competed in the AAU in the early days of my bodybuilding competition days, you might've experienced this. When I competed in the bodybuilding, they had always held the Olympic lifting competition first.
Right.
There was one contest, I think it was in Philadelphia, where the Olympic lifting went on and on and on. The bodybuilding contest, if you won't believe this, began at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Unbelievable.
3 o'clock in the morning.
Boyer Cole told me the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I mean, it's no wonder that the IFBB bodybuilding shows
took over. Yeah, right.
Listen, no offense to weightlifting. It's a legitimate sport, but
shouldn't be held on the same day, right?
Yeah, they can't help but say, and a lot of people just weren't interested. They wanted to see the bodybuilders.
Yeah.
They don't see the lifters.
Yeah.
And this really surprised me. Unless I'm wrong, I could be wrong about this. I think I read somewhere where they're getting rid of weightlifting in the Olympics.
You told me that, yeah.
And that's a shock to me. That,
yeah, me too.
And boxing also. These are the most age-old legitimate sports.
Yeah.
Or the original sports.
Right.
Think lifting rocks in the original Olympics. In Greece.
Right, right.
I mean, that's almost sacrilegious to get rid of weightlifting.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I said to myself, I have no interest in the Olympics now. I won't even watch it.
I know. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm not even really an Olympic lifting fan, but that's – I'd like to know what their reasoning is.
Bob Hoffman must be turning over in his grave.
Oh, my God. He's probably going to –
imagine he was so into that Olympic weightlifting. And, you know.
Oh, I'll tell you, if he was still alive, that alone would give him a stroke and kill him.
Right, right. So it was interesting when Harold Poole went over to the IFBB, he didn't go into Mr. America, he went to Mr. Universe, which was weird. And you know who he ended up beating in that show was Larry Scott.
Larry Scott, yeah, it got second.
Yeah.
And they reversed it. They reversed it in the Olympia.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So Harold won his class, which I believe was the tall class, and then Larry won the medium class, and then in the overall, Harold won. So that was interesting. And then they had a great rivalry that lasted years, you know.
Yeah, the guy who got second to Larry that year, his name was Jerry Winnick.
Okay.
In that year in the universe was probably my first in-person bodybuilding inspiration.
Really?
Yeah, I met him in 19 that year. I met him 1960. Was it 63? We're talking about 62.
63, yeah.
Oh, I met him in 62.
Okay.
I was training a little kind of recreational center in Brooklyn. And, you know, I saw him. You know, I think I told you the story. He was walking there near the gym, posing. And I'd never seen a real bodybuilder. And I was just very impressed by the way people looked at him. And I was a swimmer at the time, and that's what actually got me into regular training.
Okay.
Looking at Jerry Winnick, looking at the reaction that he got from people that, you know, they were just awed by this guy. And also watching the Steve Reeves Hercules movies. That's what really
got me. Okay. Yeah. I remember you told me that story about seeing that guy, but I didn't know that was
and
Jerry
in fact,
Winnick.
I'm happy to say Jerry is still alive.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, we communicate on Facebook every
no kidding. How old is he?
Oh, he's in his 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. At least,
yeah. He's still apparently healthy and alive. I was very happy to hear
wow,
that.
Wow, no kidding.
Nice
wow.
guy. Yeah, very nice guy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And then the IFBB America that year was pretty interesting because they had some big names. Freddie Ortiz, who you know, won the short class.
Right.
And then Hugo Labra won the medium class. Remember Hugo?
Hugo, yeah. Hugo Labra was also, a lot of people don't know this, was not just a bodybuilder, but he was an accomplished athlete who actually won the hammer throw event at the Pan American Games.
Wow, no kidding.
He was a world-class athlete, Hugo Labra. I used to see Hugo many years ago. I had a P.O. box about two boxes away from Arnold in Santa Monica Post Office when it was on 5th Street. And then when I checked my mail, I'd often see Hugo Labra had a box there too.
Oh, really?
Immediately. And, you know, I always wanted to go up to him and, you know, just say, hey, Mr. Labra, I'm a fan of yours. I remember seeing you in a bodybuilding years ago, but I never had the nerve. Pick up his mail and leave. It wasn't that he was unfriendly. I just, you know, I didn't want to talk to the guy, but I used to see him all the time.
And both of those guys were beat by Reg Lewis.
Reg, Freddie and Hugo
were both beat. Yeah, Reg won the tall class and the overall.
Okay, Reg Lewis. Yeah,
which was surprising to me. I thought Freddie would have won that contest.
Yeah, or Hugo had a tremendous physique.
Yeah.
He was almost like a. He did this shot like this with the hands on the hips, you know.
Uh-huh.
It was all he almost had the muscle density of Franco.
Wow!
In that shot, he was very dense in that shot. Deep abs. I'm surprised that Reg Lewis beat those guys.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, yeah,
Hugo won the most muscular at the AAU America.
Yeah.
For I think 1 year, and then he lost the second. The next year, he got second, maybe to Harold Poole. So he was so disappointed that he left the AAU and he went over to the IFBB.
Right. No, he was a very muscular guy. Short guy, 5'5" maybe, but very dense muscle, very thick, very deep abs, very, you know.
Yeah.
Very muscular.
We should mention the NABBA universe that year too. So in the amateur division, do you remember Tom Sansone? He won the amateur division.
Tom Sansone, I got to know him later on.
Really? Hmm.
Yeah, it was.
He died, right, at a pretty early age.
But very sadly, late 40s, he died of cancer.
Yeah,
he died of something called Wilms' tumor, which is kidney cancer. Usually affects children. I met Tom. I knew who he was, of course, you know, from the bodybuilding magazines. I was working in a health food store in New York, and they had a gym next to it. It was Jack Elaine Gym. Turns out that Tom was a vice president of the Jack Elaine gym, you know, and he showed up one day. He was wearing, I remember, a white shirt and a tie. And I started talking to him about, you know, mutual people that we knew, Joe Benda and stuff like that, and Dennis Tenorino. And they had just gotten the Nautilus machines in the gym, I remember.
Oh, wow.
That's how long ago this was. This is like the early 70s or something. And he looked at this Nautilus pullover machine, and he says, "Do you know how to use this thing?" I said, "Yeah." And I said, "Yeah, sit in the machine. I'll tell you what to do." So he's wearing the white shirt, the tie, and he had a cigarette dangling out of his mouth. It wasn't lit. and he started doing this pullover machine. You know what I mean? But he was a super nice guy, very nice guy, Tom Sansone. What a great guy! I felt so bad when I heard that he died. Very, very nice guy.
When I started bodybuilding in the late 70s, there was an article in Muscle Builder, and it said, "Did steroids kill Tom Sansone?"
Yeah, that's what they say. But, you know, he won the Mr. America in 1958. It was held actually out here in Los Angeles. He had a great build, a little weak on the calves, but great upper body, you know, nice arms, great abs. Tom Sansone said that he didn't use steroids for the when he won the Mr. America, he was not taking any steroids, which is very believable.
Yeah.
In 1958, steroids were not in common use in bodybuilding.
Right, right.
At all. I strongly doubt that many bodybuilders were using I can't think of it. They weren't available that much.
Right. Nobody was using them. Yeah.
63, the rumor is that he did get on some steroids. I don't know whether he had, whether confirmed that or not. But, you know, to say that the steroids killed him is kind of taking a leap.
Yeah.
Plus, from what I did a little reading on that particular type of tumor that he had called Wilms' tumor. And from what I understand, a lot of it is genetically based. In other words, he had like a time bomb in his body that could happen at any time. And he was a smoker. Tom smoked cigarettes. I again, this is speculation on my part, but I would suggest that it was the cigarette smoking more than steroids, because if he used steroids for the 63 universe, I can tell you without even knowing that it was a very, very conservative. He probably took three Dianabol or something like that. Those guys back then were not taking massive amounts, no matter what these idiots on social media say. I mean, they were taking tiny, tiny regimes or cycles of steroids. Three Dianabol, maybe Decadorablanche. They weren't taking this stuff. They were not. So let's say he took two or three Dianabol. That's not going to give him a cancer like he had. I believe it was genetically based, or what exactly turned on the tumor enough to kill him. It's hard to say. Maybe the smoking contributed. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, I would not attribute his death to the little tiny bit of steroids he might have used for the universe.
Three Dianabol, that'd be like 15 milligrams, right?
15 milligrams. Come on, I mean, the normal dose is two tablets. Like the guy who brought Dianabol to bodybuilding, Dr. John
Ziegler.
Ziegler, he had the bodybuilders on two tablets of not the weightlift he started out with,
Yeah, the
weightlifters.
weightlifters, yeah.
Two tablets, strict instructions. Don't take more than two. Do not take more than two. When they started, taking two, some of them were setting personal records, getting stronger. You know how it is. They got, well, if two works, three, four, five, and six will work even better. When Ziegler found that out, he said, "I'm done. I'm finished. I'm out of here."
Yeah, I read that about him. Yeah, he was very anti-drug after that.
He became like an anti-drug. He was the inspiration of Bob Gold. What's his name? Golden.
Holden,
Whatever.
yeah.
He's inspired him to also go on an anti-drug crusade. 360 degrees, because he was disgusted because the bodybuilders and athletes were taking three or four times the dosage he recommended. You know? So.
Yeah, and I seen his physique, and he didn't look like he was doing too many drugs, you know.
He wasn't taking drugs. I mean, he was taking, let's say, three Dianabol. That's about it. It was nice to see that year, 63, when he won the, I believe he won the professional universe. No, he
Amateur.
was an amateur. The guy who won the pro was his good friend, Joe Abenda.
Joe Abenda won the amateur the year before, and now he won the pro.
They were very good, close friends. It was
Oh, okay.
a nice situation that two close friends won the title.
And Vern Weaver, who just won the America that year, got second, so he did good in his first universe.
Vern Wee was a sad case because he went on to commit suicide,
Oh,
this
did
guy.
he really? Wow.
He killed himself, and his from what I understand, just like Chuck Sipes, he had a long history of depression. One of the big dangers of being chronically depressed is, a lot of them veer towards suicide. And so I don't know Vern Weaver. I don't know much about the guy other than he won that America in 63, but apparently he had a couple of demons in his life that caused him to take his own life, which is
Oh, wow.
very sad.
Yeah, so like you said, Joe Abenda won the pro, and he beat some good guys. He beat Serge Nubre.
Serge Dubré, that's a you can't
And he
get much.
also beat Earl Menard.
Romano, who went on to win himself the year now.
So that's a feather in his cap, man, beating two great bodybuilders.
The thing about Joe Abenda is that he had a really great back. If you could look it up online, look at photos of him doing a double on back shot. He had a lot of density in his back. And I think, just like I always tell people, that to win the Mr. Olympia, you have to have a full, wide, thick back, or else you don't win. That's why Lee Haney won it year after year. That's why Dorian Yates won it year after year. And I believe the thing that Joe Abenda had going for him more than anything else was his back. And Joe, I know how he got his back, because I was at his little gym that he had behind his parents' house in Astoria, Queens. He was a big he him and Dennis Fenrir would do sets and sets of heavy bent over barbell rows and chin-ups. Set loves, I mean, just numerous sets. of heavy. He really loved doing bent over barbell. Gave him a very thick back.
Yeah, that's the best exercise. That's the most basic movement,
Yeah, I mean, it really is.
I interviewed Joe a couple
Did
years
you? Oh,
ago.
yeah, I think I heard that. I listened to that.
Yeah, that was about a year ago, I think. Yeah.
I'm glad he's got to be up there too.
He
Jeez.
sounds great. He didn't want to do a video for some reason. He said he's too ugly looking. He said,
Oh, okay.
yeah. So we
Yeah.
had to do just an audio. So we never did a video, but he sounds great. I mean, he sounds like he's 50 years old.
I know, I heard it. I remember that. But he's got to be in his 80s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for
Got to be. I
sure.
mean, one of the Americans, 62, for crying out loud.
He was a lawyer, too.
Yeah, he was a
He worked
lawyer.
his
He
whole life
married.
as a lawyer. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he's still married, but I remember he married an
Yeah,
airline.
he's still married. They go on vacations and stuff. He's got kids and yeah.
Good for him. So,
Yeah.
good. He had a seemed like he had a pretty happy life,
Yeah, definitely.
But
Definitely.
Joe Bender, once he kind of stopped competing, he kind of got away from bodybuilding. I mean, he
Yeah.
didn't go to contests. He showed up at a couple of those old timers gatherings. He would occasionally show up at that, but he really kind of kept a very low profile once he stopped competing.
Yeah. Yeah, I asked him. I said, man, that was you did fantastic. You won the AU America, then you go on, you win the universe the same year, then you come back the next year, you win the pro universe. He was one of the few people to win the amateur universe and the pro universe back to back like that. And
That's
he's
right.
like, yeah, I just got lucky, right place, right time,
No, he had a nice physique, Like I
Yeah.
said, the strong point was definitely his back.
Yeah, he had a lot, some good thickness, right, for that time. Yeah.
He's a little weak on the legs, though, but
Yeah.
in those days, you can get by like that. It wouldn't be like today.
Right.
Today, a guy like Joe Abenda would not do well at contests.
He wasn't really that ripped either, but
He wasn't ripped. He was not ripped at all, which is why.
that wasn't in style either back then, right?
Wasn't so that's why a guy like Harold stood out so much.
Yeah.
Harold was ripped.
Yeah.
It's kind of like almost like what Vince Gironda told me, where he said when he competed, they kept giving him fourth and third and fourth place because he was so ripped. The other guys were all smooth, they didn't know what to do with him.
Well, that's what made me think of it because I remember seeing a picture of Joe and Vince standing next to each other. It had to be at one of those NABBA universes. I think it was the year before.
That's right.
And Gironda was ripped. And it was like, and Joe beat him,
Yeah, that's right. Joe did beat him.
Yeah.
Vince was wearing the tiger trunks, right?
Right.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and
he had to be frustrated to be so ripped and nobody even appreciated it back then,
I remember Vince telling me the story himself. He said that the judges actually told him. He says, you have all these veins all over the place. He says, you have this definition. I mean, none of the other guys, we don't know what to do with you.
It's too much.
And so Vince looks at me, he said, you think they'd be judging on muscularity, but they didn't.
Right.
Right. I mean, you can't lie. The photos tell you the truth. I mean, it
Yeah.
wasn't like he was bragging, Vince. It's right there in the photos. You can see it.
Right. All right, thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. Thanks again to Jerry Branum for joining us on the show. Next week, we will have part two of our interview where we'll cover the year 1973, which was a really significant year also in bodybuilding. We'll talk about the AU Mr. America, the NABBA Mr. Universe, and we'll also talk about the IFBB Mr. Olympia, of course, as well as the IFBB Mr. America, Mr. World, and Mr. Universe. So it was an action-packed year. That was also the year they wrote the book Pumping Iron. So that was very significant as well. So I love talking to Jerry. He's got a lot of stories. So we'll continue this discussion next week when we talk about 1973. I want to thank all our Patreon sponsors for continuing to support the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I give out a newsletter. I try to do it every week, or at least I do a couple times a month for all our Patreon sponsors. I also send them extra audio articles and video articles each month, just as my thanks for helping to support the show. So thank you guys very much for supporting the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. I could not do the show without you because it helps pay for the production costs and all the other little costs that are involved. So thank you guys for supporting the show very much. And that is it. Happy New Year, everybody. I hope it's a wonderful 2024 to everybody. And we will be back next week with another episode with Jerry Branum. Until then, stay safe, train hard. We'll see you guys next week. Take care.